It's just the normal noises in here.
This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
The album you will be reviewing this week is Talking Book by Stevie Wonder.
Okay, I don't know this album, but I'm more familiar with his early stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Unless this is one of his early ones, I don't know.
All right, so Talking Book is the 15th studio album by Stevie Wonder, released on October 27th, 1972, by Tamla Records, a Motown subsidiary. Widely regarded as a landmark in soul and R&B music, the album marks a turning point in Wonder's career as he gained full creative control over his music. Blending elements of soul, funk, rock, and synthesizer-driven pop, Talking Book showcases Wonder's innovative production, socially conscious lyrics, and emotional depth. The album features some of his most iconic songs, including the infectious, funk-infused Superstition and the tender ballad You Are the Sunshine of My Life, both of which became number one hits, with contributions from legendary musicians like Jeff Beck and Ray Parker Jr. The album is celebrated for its rich textures, pioneering use of synthesizers, and deeply personal songwriting. Critically acclaimed and commercially successful, Talking Book helped define the sound of the 1970s soul and solidified Stevie Wonder's reputation as a visionary artist.
I actually, oddly enough, I think I have this album because I think I have the one with Superstition on it. I didn't realize it was this one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because he released a lot of albums in that period. There's this one, there's Songs in the Key of Life. It's easy to get them sort of mixed up. But this was released on 27th of October, 1972. The genres are progressive soul, funk, soul, rock, and jazz. Released on Tamla Records, and it was produced by Stevie Wonder, Robert Margoloff, and Malcolm Cecil. There are 10 tracks on the album, so if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, we stop at the halfway point, so we'll take a break after side one, and it's pretty evenly five and five, side one and side two. So the album starts with You Are the Sunshine of My Life, and side one ends with You've Got It Bad, Girl. So if you want to take a pause there, we'll discuss at the halfway point. And I just want to remind you to check us out on Patreon if you feel like you want to help out the show. You can get these episodes the day before they go live. You get a shout out during these episodes, and you can even pick an album for us to review. But without further ado, okay, here is the first song on the album, You Are the Sunshine of My Life. So here we go. All right, and ending side one with You've Got It Bad, Girl. Yeah, this is really good. He's insanely talented, a really good songwriter. Like I don't think there hasn't been a song that I haven't loved yet. They've all been different, and they've all been really just they've all been interesting in different ways.
Yeah, sonically, he's always been a little bit different than a lot of other people, like with his use of the, I guess it's a synthesizer or something like that, a really early Moog, probably. The fact that it sort of drives the bass in a lot of this is that hum as opposed to a thump or something like that. It's sort of really interesting.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed about by listening to this is I never really got the connection between R&B in the 60s and the 70s to what R&B would become in like the 90s. And I'm listening to this, I'm like, oh, okay, they're just ripping everything off from this.
Yeah, to an extent, yeah.
Like, honestly, that last song, You've Got It Bad Girl, I could see that being an R&B hit in like 1997-98.
Yeah, it could be.
Maybe with like some more 90s production, but
yeah,
really,
exactly.
You know, honestly, not much. Like the melodies and the harmonies and the vocals would be perfect, and then maybe some 90s sounding instruments underneath it, but you know, maybe just the drums, honestly.
Yeah, no, I can sort of hear that. Yeah, I'm liking this, but it's Stevie Wonder. I didn't expect a bad album from him.
And well, I think what happened was, he's been around since he was a kid.
Oh, I really know. Early 60s, even.
Yeah. And he was on Motown Records basically, you know, I love Motown, but their system was, you know, you're a singer and we've got songwriters and we've got, you know, the Funk Brothers to play on it and everything. You're just the singer. You don't have any really say in what songs you're going to sing. We'll give you songs to sing. And I know Marvin Gaye did something similar. He broke out and started writing his own stuff. And Stevie Wonder did too. And this is his first album of him writing all of his own material. And yeah, and it's... the fact that this is his first album, not his first album, but his first album of like writing, and he's writing everything. He's the producer and he's playing most of the instruments. Like he's playing the drums, like everything. And he's blind.
Yeah. He's a tour de force. Always has been. Yeah. This is probably him at his peak. I love this era of his stuff. And yeah, again, he could play, you throw an instrument at him, he'll figure it out and it'll wind up on his next album, sort of thing.
Yeah, he's incredibly talented. And you know, I he's got the, it's one thing, like this is Motown, what was the label that this came out on? Tamla. That is so he's still kind of connected to Motown. That's a subsidiary of Motown. But I guess that was a label that was created. I don't know if that was created for him, but it was created. Well, actually, I want to look that up. Okay. So it's been around since 1959. Okay. I thought it might have been created for the purposes of like Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder to
experiment a little bit more.
Yeah, do their own thing. But I guess maybe it became that.
I think it sort of became that sort of a thing. Like subsidiary labels are famous for being ones, as opposed to, you know, the Motown label that their bread and butter comes from. They would use a subsidiary label to take more risks with. These business wise, that is. I mean, this album wasn't, I mean, it's a huge album, so I don't think it was that big of a risk, but I guess they didn't know what to expect from it.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess Motown, they have their thing and the way that they work, and so yeah, it makes sense that it would come out on a different label. So one of the things that I noticed is there was some really good guitar playing. I think it was in maybe Your Baby.
Yeah. The fuzz guitar.
Yeah. That was Ray Parker Jr.
Was that really?
Okay. Yeah. And Ray Parker, you probably know, he's the guy that did the Ghostbusters theme. I didn't know anything about him, but I didn't know he was a guitar player, to be honest. There's quite a few people on here. I mean, Jeff Beck is on here.
Well, Superstition was written for Jeff Beck originally.
But I think the record label...
Beck, Bogart, and the Peace, which is Bogart and the Peace were part of Vanilla Fudge. They did an album with Jeff Beck, yeah, called Beck, Bogart, and the Peace. And the song is on it. I know that. And I think it came out before Stevie Wonder's version.
Oh, really?
Did.
Okay. Yeah. But that's a live album, right? There's no studio version of it, is
that,
there?
That is a studio album, actually, that one. There is, I think, the live album as well that they did as well, but I'm not sure where that fits into all that, but I'm pretty sure the Beck, Bogart, and the Peace album, we've got it on something somewhere. I've definitely heard it, so it's on it. So.
Yeah, because he did Ain't Superstitious, and then...
Yeah, well, Ain't Superstition is a different song, yeah. Ain't Superstitious is an old, I think we actually talked about that one last week because of the Megadeth did it, which I didn't know Megadeth did.
No, I don't. Yeah, I know. I didn't either. And I know this probably gets brought up quite a bit, but I mean, he's super talented in all the instruments that he plays in his songwriting, but his voice is so distinct as well. Like it's, there's never any mistaking that it's him. And he's had that voice since he was like little, even before his, you know, went through puberty and voice changed, you could still tell, even though it was a little higher, you could still, you know, hear that Stevie Wonder voice. It's like, oh yeah, that's him for sure. And, you know, sometimes when voices, you know, change in puberty and they get deeper and whatever, sometimes like you can have a really good singing voice when you're a kid, but when you get older, it doesn't quite, you know, cross that barrier. But in his case, I mean, it's like he's singing really well here. And I think he's actually, there are backup singers, but he's layering some of the harmonies with himself.
Yeah, I noticed that with Maybe Your Baby, but it sounded like he actually changed the pitch on it a little bit, which was sort of interesting, but it did still sound like his voice. So,
which at that time was hard to do. That actually with analog, with now with digital, I mean, Pro Tools, you can do that no problem. But with analog, you actually had to speed up the tape.
Yep.
To be able to change the pitch. But you have to speed it up. You have to know how much to speed it up for it to fit within the key of the song.
And the tempo of the song.
And the tempo, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Unless it was one of those things where he recorded it in another key and figured, I'm going to have to change this.
It could be.
Could be something like that. But I don't know. It worked anyway.
Yeah. There was actually, I was reading that record companies would do this a lot. I think it was a trend in like the late 70s and early 80s where they would sort of speed up the tape a little bit so that the song was faster than anything else on the radio. It was competition. So that's why like some songs, like if you're learning guitar, you can't really play along with them because they're sort of between keys, because they're just a little, the tape is sped up a little bit, which is kind of annoying. But
they had weird little tricks back in the day of trying to one up each other and, you know, making a faster song. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily one of the more effective ways of having a better. It certainly wouldn't do anything to make a better song, but it would be.
No, not necessarily.
So it's not exactly sure what maybe it was danceability or something like that. I don't know.
I'm not one to try to figure out what record companies will do to try and make things like they don't know what they're doing. I have to think. But, you know, I think it's interesting, like, to think about if this album, like, were to be released today, I think it would fit in really well with today's music.
Yeah, it could. I think it might be a little more sophisticated than what you would find in a lot of today's music. But I still think it would do pretty well.
Yeah, because, you know, like I said, it's sort of the bridge of like the 60s R&B to like the 90s R&B. And maybe not now, but maybe like 15, 20 years ago, it might have been, might have done something.
I mean, there's some artists who, you know, have actually managed to do something interesting, but there seem to be very few and far between. And I can't say, I don't know. There's very few artists that compel me enough for me to sit down and listen to an album. If they came up in this chart here, then I guess I'd be sort of forced to listen to it and then, you know, come to terms with it. Which is sort of what happens a couple times that we've reviewed an album. But, yeah, there's still, when I think about, you know, stuff that's on the top 40 chart, it's just, it seems like a completely different planet than the stuff that I listen to. And it's a little disheartening sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, every once in a while, there's a gem that comes along and is a big hit. But I think this album in particular feels, even though it has like that 70s synthesizer, it does feel, there is a timeless quality about it. You know, it does transcend, you know, like it could be released today, and if someone went in blind and said, oh, this is a new album, someone who, you know, maybe wouldn't pick up on the 70s production, if you just and wasn't familiar with Stevie Wonder, you said, hey, you got to check out this new artist, and they listened to it, they probably wouldn't question that it wasn't new.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
There's definitely still a few things that sort of date it to 1972, or at least the 1970s. It was pretty advanced even for its time.
It really
was.
In
a lot of ways. But yeah, it's a groundbreaking, so.
Exactly. So I did manage to find a few facts about the album. Superstition was originally meant for Jeff Beck. Guitarist Jeff Beck was originally supposed to record Superstition, but Motown executives insisted Stevie release it himself. The track became a massive hit, reaching number one on the Billboard Hot 100, and is now one of Wonder's signature songs. Stevie Wonder, he played most of the instruments on many tracks, including Superstition and You Are the Sunshine of My Life. Stevie Wonder played drums, keyboards, and synthesizers himself. His multi-instrumental talent helped craft the album's distinctive layered sound. Yeah, I mean, he really knew how to, like, create textures. And I would say, honestly, he's maybe on the same level of Brian Wilson in that regard of being able to sort of hear what he wants and know exactly how to execute that,
especially in the days of analog recording. It really did take another kind of person to do stuff like that back then, to wrap your head around the technology and to know how to execute stuff like that. And most artists didn't do that.
Exactly.
But there were, you know, a handful of artists who just, you know, looked at the equipment or whatever and said, why don't we do this? And next thing you know, you got tape all over the room.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're doing something absolutely mad.
Yeah, like a mad scientist or something.
Exactly.
It's number three. It marked a shift to creative independence. Talking Book was part of Wonder's so-called classic period. When he negotiated full artistic control from Motown, this gave him the freedom to experiment with new sounds, write more personal lyrics, and pioneer the use of, the Tonto synthesizer.
A Tonto synthesizer. Okay. All right.
I think there were quite a few like different kinds of synthesizers that were being made at that time.
Again, very new technology, Tonto synthesizer. Yeah, I think I've heard the name, but it's not one of the more common ones. But it's got a very distinct sound then, because the way Stevie Wonder uses it, anyway, it just sounds like him.
And yeah, this was his first Grammy win. The album earned Stevie Wonder his first two Grammys, Best Male Pop Vocal Performance for You Are the Sunshine of My Life, and Best Male R&B Vocal Performance for Superstition.
Hmm.
So that's kind of cool that, you know, that's got to be really nice, you know, that, you know, you've got this new album, it's all yours, it's your creative output, you've poured your heart and soul into this thing, you've finally broken free from the constraint of, you know, not having any freedom, and then you win your first two Grammys with that. I mean, that's got to be, you know, not that it's about awards, but
it's not about awards, but it was also the time period was a little more friendly to expression that way. I just have a hard time seeing that being like the awards have become such a game.
So the last one is the album cover pays tribute to his blindness. The cover shows Stevie Wonder kneeling in sand and touching the ground, a subtle nod to how he experiences the world through touch and sound rather than sight. It's a symbolic and powerful image of his connection to his senses and his artistry.
Okay.
So yeah. That's kind of cool that, yeah. Yeah, so those are some interesting facts about the album. But I guess we'll get back into the second side of the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friends over at Getting Down and Wordy. So check those guys out.
Riz.
Greetings.
Gendered language.
Onomatopoeias.
The ick.
What makes some words sound funny?
Why just listen to music when you can overanalyze the words in the songs?
Music, language, and Eurovision all crammed into one podcast.
Getting Down and Wordy with Russell and Hannah. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Find us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two.
Come on,
thank you. Here's side two.
All right, and ending the album with I Believe When I Fall in Love, It Will Be Forever. Yeah, I mean, this is an incredible album. I don't think there's a bad song on here. They're all pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know what else to say. I mean, I really don't have any criticism.
Yeah, I can't think of anything to really criticize anything about. I really like the song, Maybe Your Baby. I sort of thought maybe the extension on the end was a little long, but that's like nitpicking.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it could be a little shorter, but
and I really like that. I think it's actually one of my favorite songs, though. So it's
yeah, you know, it's Stevie Wonder. I mean, it's
yeah.
I know. I mean, we've gone over it. I mean, he's a very talented songwriter, multi-instrumentalist. Yeah, there's really not much he can't do.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of artists when they do an album where they play mostly instruments, they'll still get a drummer to play the drums because for whatever reason they don't feel confident on the drums. He's a fantastic drummer too. I mean, he's got a really good groove.
Yeah,
he's just
I was wondering, who plays guitar on Looking for Another Pure Love?
That was Jeff Beck.
That was Jeff Beck. Yeah. I thought so. He said, I mean, it sounded like just a couple of the things that were going on sounded like, oh, that might be somebody like Jeff Beck playing. And then he says, take it away, Jeff, or something like that.
Yeah, there. He did. Yep. Yeah, that was Jeff Beck on that.
Jeff, I was wondering. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, too, is he's able to play all the instruments, but he's also a really good collaborator, too. Like getting really good musicians in when, you know, he doesn't have an ego about like, no, I need to play all the instruments. It's like, no, you know, let's, you know, I've got this person here who's a really good guitar player. Let's, you know, see what, put him on my record and see what he can do.
Yeah, I guess so. I wonder what his confidence is on the guitar, because he seems to like borrowing other guitar players, but
yeah, that's a good point.
But, that's not to take away from his talent, because
no,
you know, it's just you know where your strengths are and you know where your weaknesses are and you know work accordingly.
Oh, you can't play guitar, what a loser. So what would be your three highlights on the album?
Oh, Superstition, of course.
Yeah.
Maybe Your Baby, probably. That's a really good one. Mm-hmm. I really like the funky stuff. And then I really like I Believe, or When I Fall in Love, It'll Be Forever. I thought that was a pretty good song. It was just really well done, really well written.
Honestly, I think those are my picks too. It's tough to pick, but yeah, I think those would be my highlights too. I also like Big Brother. I thought that was pretty cool.
Big Brother was a really good song. I was considering that one too. And Looking for Another Pure Love, I was considering that one, not just because of Jeff Beck, but because it's a really good song.
Yeah, I think your picks are mine as well. Yeah. So I think I know the question, I know the answer, but what would be your, would you listen to this again?
Five. No, I'm kidding. yes, I would listen to this again.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I mean, it's yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's one of those albums I'm going to have to maybe, you know, take a look and see if I can hunt down and get it on vinyl. I mean, it's, yeah, I think it's one of those albums everyone should maybe have in their collection.
Yeah, it's a good one. Makes me want to listen to some of the other ones I've got.
So yeah, I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. Be sure to check out polyphonicpress.com. You can get updates and listen to all the previous episodes. And yeah, if you want to help us out, visit us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. And yeah, if you're listening, you want to follow the show, definitely do that so you don't miss any future episodes. And leave us a rating and review, because it helps new listeners find us. And yeah, I think that pretty much does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.